Janasek, we'll give the council a moment to pack up. Good morning.
Morning, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Did I guess correctly on time? 3 minutes?
Yes, ma'am.
You're reserving 3 minutes?
Yes.
Okay. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. John Versnelli, police support for Dr. Janasek. This case arises out of a overzealous investigation of a dentist and the subsequent restriction of his license. The court granted summary judgment dismissal of the case based primarily on the argument that the state has absolute immunity. Interestingly, in the state's brief, they continue to claim that they have absolute immunity, and they do not. If there's any immunity at all, it's qualified immunity. They don't have...
What facts would you point to in the record to demonstrate an absence of good faith?
With regard to the good faith requirement is regard to the board member.
That's right.
And he then has to have some basis for the restriction he puts on the doctor. They can't just suspend his license. They have a basis for that.
Well, the Supreme Court has talked about, in this court, about good faith in terms of honesty and lawfulness of a purpose, rather than in terms of the standard of care used by the individual committing the act.
And I think what the difference here is how
good
is the law?
Evidence in the record that the person that signed that order or the other members of the board acted dishonestly?
Not dishonestly, no.
Okay. Is there any evidence in the record that they intended to act unlawfully?
The argument can be made that they went beyond the statute, intentionally went beyond the statute when they restricted
his
license. What
evidence is there that they intentionally went beyond the statute rather than having a good faith belief that what they were doing was within the scope of their statutory?
There's no evidence that they had any good faith belief whatsoever. What they did was ignore what the state...
Don't you need to bring forth some evidence of absence of good faith? Or do they have to present evidence of good faith?
I think they have to establish that they acted in good faith, and I don't think there's a basis
for
that. What
case do you rely on for that proposition?
That they have to bring forward evidence of good faith?
Yes.
I can't cite it, Your Honor.
I mean, normally when a defense makes an argument, a summary judgment that you can't prove your case, you have to come forth with some evidence of each element. And to establish a 1983 action, you have to show that these folks don't have the qualified immunity that you've identified, which means you would have to show some evidence of a lack of good faith.
With regard to 1983, it's a qualified immunity.
Agreed on that, I thought, my question. But my question requires you to show, I think, evidence of the absence of good faith. That's an element of what you have to show.
With regard to the immunity that they get under 1832-0357, yes, that's good faith. That has to do with...
Would you like to go into your 3 minutes?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
That has to do with the immunity of the board members. But now we're talking about, in 1983 Act, we're talking about the investigator. And that's qualified immunity. And that has
alleged that the investigator in your complaint, you describe her conduct as grossly negligent. Is gross negligence enough to prove a 1983 action claim?
Well, under 1983, she loses her immunity if her conduct is not objectively reasonable. And there's evidence here that her conduct was not objectively reasonable. She went beyond the scope of her duties. She colluded with...
Go beyond the scope of her duties as opposed to perform the scope of her duties grossly negligently.
Well, again, gross negligence isn't what's required to lose that immunity. It's whether or not
But you just said she was outside the scope of her duties, and you stand the law of agency on its head if the performance of duties is negligent, takes the performance outside the scope. I don't know how respondeat superior would ever work if that was true.
Well, what happened in this instance was she went ahead and began an investigation before she was authorized to do so. So right there, she's beyond the scope of what she's supposed to do. She also went beyond and did not follow the standard operating procedures with regard to the scope of the investigation that she conducted, the representations she made to Dr. Janizak as far as what he had to tell her, and the impartiality that she is required under their procedures to follow. She loses that immunity if in carrying out a statutory duty, she doesn't act reasonably. That's in the Leslie case as well as in the Jones case. And in the Jones case, that's exactly what happened. These investigators went beyond. They didn't fabricate evidence. They fabricated an emergency that then the board relied upon to take away the pharmacist's license, and that was enough. The other issue that they brought up is that you can't say, can't claim a negligent investigation. They said we can't do that because we only recognize it in cases involving, the courts only recognize it in cases involving minors, such as DSHS contact. That isn't true. The Leslie case establishes that if there's a statutory duty to investigate, then a negligent investigation can be brought. They raised a case, they talked about the case of Stansfield, which is the toxicology lab case, but Stansfield does not rely upon, and the investigation there was not an actual statutory investigation. It was the policies and procedures utilized by the toxicology lab. It was not a specific investigation statutorily required. The defamation case was also dismissed, and their allegation there is, well, these are true. Well, the statement that was made that was defamatory.
You don't, in your briefing on that claim, respond to the public official statement immunity claim that was also argued. And maybe in your rebuttal you can address that.
Well, actually, you should also.
Oh, you're done, aren't you?
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Court, please. My name is Ed Winskill. I represent the defendants. The case, as regards the board, the executive members of the board, and indeed the investigator, as far as the state law claims are concerned, is in fact one of absolute immunity, qualified and absolute immunity with respect to the board and its executive members with respect to the 1983 case, as well qualified immunity in that context as to the investigator. And clearly the statutes, in addition to 1832, 18133300, which is the general statute of absolute liability for boards and commissions formed under the Uniform Disciplinary Act, and their employees and staff in carrying out their duties. So indeed, we maintain the argument, as we've maintained throughout, that the principles of absolute immunity apply. With respect to 1983, claims, those principles also apply under quasi-judicial immunity principles set out in some detail in our brief with regard to the executive members and the board itself. And Hammond versus Fright, which is a 1983 case here in the state, as is Jones versus Department of Health, both clearly state in the context of 1983 claims that the judicial body and its executive members, I mean, the disciplinary body and its executive members, have absolute immunity for federal law purposes as well.
The Supreme Court has said they have immunity for damage claims, but not future injunctive relief.
Well, on the question of
Personnel suggests that he has a claim for future injunctive relief.
Well, the difficulty with that, Your Honor, as with virtually all, well, I would say all of these claims, is no showing is made. There are pleading for an injunction in this case.
Did your motion for summary judgment raise the issue that there weren't any facts justifying injunctive relief?
My motion asked for dismissal of all the claims of the plaintiff.
Well, I understand that, but what were the grounds that were offered for the dismissal broad enough to include the assertion that there was no factual basis?
Well, I think they clearly are, because the ultimate request for injunctive or declaratory relief, there are several set forth in the amended complaint, but the main one is exoneration of Dr. Janizak from the claims of sexual abuse or sexual conduct with patients, claims, of course, which were never adjudicated and which were supported in the initial proceedings. So no effort was made, nor can I conceive of a set of circumstances under the uncontested facts of this case that a Superior Court would issue such an injunction. True, in the initial motion, we did not specifically address the issues of injunction as opposed to the other issues. But on the other hand, counsel, in arguing about injunction in response to our motion, only points out that injunction claims can be based upon state constitutional bases, whereas he agreed tort claims could not. Beyond that, he made no effort to show, in fact, that there would be any issue of fact as to injunctive relief, any more than he made any genuine issue effort to create an issue of fact as to the relief under his theories of damages. Now, on the qualified immunity issue, which comes up only with respect to the investigator in the 1983 case, the qualified immunity, Jones is absolutely clear that this claim of gross negligence acting outside of the scope that Your Honor touched upon does not take an investigator in a context such as this outside the scope of qualified immunity at all. In fact, her departure, as claimed by the plaintiff, from a proper investigative technique, which of course is very much in dispute, her claimed departure, by definition, is negligent. In other words, a negligence claim. He claims that the manuals of procedure of the Department of Health require an impartial investigation, and she did not do an impartial investigation, and so forth and so on. As I think the court questioning pointed out, this is like saying that if the bread truck driver violates the manuals issued by his employer that he obey all traffic laws and drive safely, he is therefore taken outside the scope of employment. Clearly, that is not the case. So, obviously, there are two aspects very broadly to our motion. One is that the claims themselves never rose to the level of cognizable claims, and secondly, if they did, principles of immunity apply. With regard to the claim of negligent investigation, in fact, contrary to what counsel says, there is no case outside the context of child welfare statutes which permits a claim for negligent investigation under Washington law. A negligent investigation is a term much bandied about in cases, but there is no claim, and the reasons for it are ultimately based upon the public duty doctrine. They were most recently, perhaps not most recently, but recently explicated in the Stansfield versus Douglas County case, and nowhere in his response to the summary judgment below did Dr. Janizak even engage or discuss those issues or contest the application of the public duty doctrine. And he, in oral argument today, as in the briefing, the proposition he cites, the case he cites for the proposition there is a general duty claim for negligent investigation, is the Leslie case, which is a child welfare case involving placement, taking a child out of a home. The very category of cases, sole category of cases, where that claim exists under Washington law. So it hardly stands for the proposition that he asserts it for. But most importantly, the existence of those kinds of claims only arise out of specific legislative direction, and that's what the court held in the child welfare cases. And in this case, 18-130-160 subparagraph 12 tells us what the purpose of the Uniform Disciplinary Act is. It is to safeguard the health and safety of the public. This is the paramount responsibility of every board and commission constituted under this act, as opposed to the child welfare statutes, which direct specifically the preservation of the parent-child relationship and, above all, the preservation of the safety of the child. The investigative responsibilities under the UDA in this case are not for the benefit of the practitioner. They are for the benefit of the public. Now, to turn to the question that started the discussion, that of good faith, let us keep in mind that there are three principles of immunity with respect to the tribunal and its employees. Absolute immunity that says nothing about good faith, just like a superior court or any other judicial body. The specific statute in the that in 1832, which constitutes the DQAC, which provides immunity to the board, doesn't mention employees there, performing their acts in good faith, and the principles of quasi-judicial immunity of common law, which apply independently of those principles. Good faith is something, no effort, I pointed this out in my brief at some length. I thought it was of extreme importance that the paucity of the record here, the thinness of the record, but no attempt was ever made to show that the people on this panel acted in a dishonest or corrupt fashion or otherwise were lacking in good faith when what was presented to them. We have in the summary reports attached to the declaration of the investigator who went before the board, describing specific sexual conduct, sexual approaches during the time that, in the case of BG, I'm referring to now, CP 382 and 381, that she was a patient, and the response by Dr. Janczak, which appeared before the board at the time, was summarized by the investigator, is to hair split as to whether she was a patient, because she was first to call her a liar, saying he didn't start the relationship till a couple of months later and he didn't know who she was when he started it, to parsing the question of whether or not she was really a patient because his staff were the ones who actually performed the two procedures on her in January during the period of time she says he was making the sexual advances to her. This is the kind of material they had in front of them when they acted. And there is absolutely no, and the issue isn't whether they were wrong. And the issue isn't whether it was overzealousness, it's whether it was in their power and whether there's any evidence of bad faith. I request that the judgment of the trial court be affirmed.
Thank you, counsel.